painting to photography, from beadwork to woodworking. KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University presents Artbeat. Artbeat highlights the work and accomplishments of local artists from in and around Winona. Support for Artbeat is made possible by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
Welcome to a special Friday edition of Artbeat. Today we're going to talk about an amazing percussive dance performance that's coming to Winona, Minnesota this Saturday. Hi, you're listening to a special edition of Artbeat. I'm Terry Tenseth, and today I have some very special members of the Flying Foot Forum with me who will be performing Saturday evening at the Valencia Arts Center. Go ahead and introduce yourselves.
I'm Joe Quala.
Hi, I'm Charles Robinson.
Now, Joe, you're the head of this company.
Yes.
Wait, I thought I was...
No, Charles. No.
Do you get this mixed up? Is this a common thing?
Yeah. I mean, you know, every once in a while he likes to give me the director's hat, but yeah. Oh, well.
Just to appease him.
Yeah. So you're a performing member?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I started in 2008 with a show called French Twist and have been working regularly with the company since.
Great. So obviously you like it because you're still with it.
Obviously, I love it. Yeah, it's been fantastic.
Now, Joe, you're kind of a jack of all trades. You're a performer, choreographer, teacher,
yes,
writer, composer. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot going on there in that mixed bag.
Yeah.
So how did you come to settle down? And, well, you probably haven't settled down. You're probably doing everything still, is my guess. Mm-hmm. But how did you come to the Flying Foot Forum and developing that?
Well, this is our 20th year, so I founded the company in 1991, and I moved to Minnesota to get closer to my hometown and all my family. My parents live in Madison, Wisconsin, and I just landed in Minneapolis and wasn't sure what I was going to do. I knew I wanted to do something where I was able to create my own work, and I have so many interests, and I just decided to try to do something that combined them all. And percussive dance was a very big part of that, and theater and music and other kinds of dance. So I tried to put it all together in a way that used all of those things to create really unusual, fun percussive dance pieces.
What is it that you two think that brings people towards percussive dance or makes percussive dance such an interesting thing to go and see and partake in?
I think because it's so multifaceted, you're watching people move and make music at the same time. We sing, we dance with instruments in our hands. And this show in particular is very quintessential Flying Foot Forum because we have 9 small pieces that we perform. And for all 9 pieces, we make the music on stage while we're moving and dancing and singing. So it's a very fun show. There's 9 pieces. A lot of them are very funny, clever. They're all very clever, but a lot of them are very funny. We have a crazy chef piece, and Charles plays one of the crazy chefs in, and it's a lot of fun.
What's the crazy chef?
Well,
chefs are all kind of crazy, aren't they?
Yeah. It's a little vignette within the show that features a character who is pressed into donning a chef costume because he's hiding from somebody. And that leads into the rest of the kitchen staff running in and saying, "Oh my goodness, we don't have any time. What do we do? Show us what we do." And he has to make up something on the fly. So he uses certain kitchen utensils and bowls and food to make a rhythm piece.
Now, some of the rhythm pieces are verse as well, like
yes,
you were saying.
Yes.
Now, what are the different types of challenges in creating verse into percussion?
Well, you actually use the verse as percussion. You know, you use your voice. One of the pieces that you're talking about, the one that's most verse heavy, is a piece called I Saw Esau. And that is based on kind of creepy little children's counting rhymes and little play rhymes that have developed over the centuries. And we take all of these kind of odd little rhymes that kids do for, you know, playing games and combine them together into sort of a rhythmic score. So we speak them, you know, in different pitches and tones, and then we do movement to go with it. So it's a lot of fun. And then we wear black frock coats and white scarves with it, and it looks very sort of Victorian and a little bit on the edge, but fun in a funny way.
So it's kind of putting you into a different space that you might not be comfortable with. A little bit.
I think people are pretty comfortable. It's that fun kind of scary.
Okay.
Edward Gorey and that sort of thing.
That stuff is actually fun.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so.
Adam's Family.
Yeah.
The Munsters.
Oh, now that's a debate. Which one do you like better?
Yeah. I'm not going to say.
We'll keep it a secret. Now, when you're developing content and choreography for your show, what's the process you go through? And then for you, what's the process of practicing?
It usually starts with an idea, and those can come from almost anywhere. Maybe sometimes it comes from being inspired by a piece of music that feels very viscerally engaging, so that you'd want to, you know, jump around and stomp and beat your body and scream and all those things that we do. Sometimes it just comes from a concept that we wanted to do this piece with just a few people. We made all of the percussion and all of the music on stage while we were dancing. So that was the concept that led to this. I think we had done one piece like that, and we said we should do an entire concert like this. The piece we just did at the Guthrie was all based on the Bosnian War, and it was scripted, and so that came from a whole different place. You know, there was Balkan music in it, and we really enjoyed working with that sort of cultural context.
And then for you, what's the rehearsal process like? Does it start out real slow and methodical, or do you guys jump right into it? Or
yeah, it fluctuates. Having a background in tab and also being very rhythmically inclined to play drum and play a lot of hand percussion, those certain talents have really helped me to listen and then also to apply, so that it's a quicker learning experience. But for some of the portions, it's a lot harder. And sometimes you have to work against your background in order to incorporate a better look at the character. Instead of just being a technical dancer,
right,
you're actually playing a personality. Once again, it's a very multifaceted experience as a performer working in these pieces. Because it can either, you can be doing a solo, but you still have to be interacting with yourself. And so that is sometimes the challenge. Particularly for this show itself, we had done the chef piece originally for a show 3 years ago. But I had to then come in and basically learn portions that had already been set on a lot of other performers. And so learning that, but then adding my own artistic flair to it has been, well, that's definitely the appeal of working with the Flying Foot Forum.
Can I add to that? I think part of the process for everybody, including myself, is we do different kinds of things that involve different kinds of technique, and you really have to develop your technique in order to perform. It's not that other forms of dance don't have challenges, modern dance, I'm thinking, but it isn't that you learn something in class and then you come and apply it to this company. Sometimes you're learning an entirely new technique. For example, Charles learned Appalachian Hambone for this performance because he'd never done that section before. So you really have to learn a different technique. Even though you've done different kinds of body percussion, you have to learn what a hambone is. And they're all different, all these different percussive techniques. And you think they look very similar, but they're all they all have their own thing.
They all have their own intonation too.
Right. Yeah.
So depending on how you deliver it,
yep,
creates a different meaning or feeling.
Yeah.
So for you, Charles, you're really kind of splitting right brain and left brain a little bit, because you're looking at technical as I'm doing this with my body at this time. But
right,
at the same time, this creative thing's got to pop in and
right,
say, I have to maintain a character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the challenge. Like I said, that is because for our last show, most of us were more familiar with the hambone portions, but they were centered in more of like large modern dance phrases. And this time I'm just sitting in a chair, and I have to do it just sitting in a chair. There's so many different aesthetics that infuse and they inform each other. So that's just the most exciting part about it, is learning these brand new things in different contexts. Instead of, this is regular tap where I'm raised on the balls of my feet and I'm very prim and proper. But instead, we're learning Appalachian clogging. And so that makes you have to be really down low, and you have to actually use your heels instead of like the Savion Glover type of tap school. So there are a million different things that run through your right and left brain as you're trying to just do one thing. And that's where it just... this is an experience really that goes well beyond any background that I've ever been trained in.
So it's more about the process and the end product, I assume, right?
Oh, well, not when we get on stage.
Right, no. Except for showtime.
So, right. It's a mix of both, of course. You know, you go through the process to get to that performance, you know, and that's what the audience cares about, I think. So we better be good, you know. we could just have a great rehearsal period. If the audience doesn't like it, it's kind of not worth anything, is it? So we're very aware of trying to give the audience something that they can take away and get excited about.
How many hours of practice do you think you have for, like, give me an example of the piece, you know, that you just mentioned?
Well, this whole concert took hours and hours. You know, we worked on, I think, over 2 years.
Wow. Okay.
But, you know, yeah. not every night
right.
rehearsing, but, you know, over a period of 2 years, we slowly developed 9 pieces while we were working on other projects. So it takes quite a bit of time because there's that, for me, there's the whole, I love to sketch a piece out first, get it completely sort of sketched in, which is sometimes a little frustrating for dancers because they're trying to get the specifics, mm-hmm. you know. But I like to get from the beginning to the end, and I often say, just don't worry if you're not getting that step yet. Just kind of mark through it, get through it. We're going to go on. I want to finish this out. And then we go back and really hone the technique of it, and then the adding the layers of performance and character and all the nuances to it. So it takes quite a while to get a whole piece together and to really get it in your body and get it into your soul, basically. So it takes quite a while.
Now, speaking to each individually, when did you realize that this was the path for you creatively? And we'll go with you first, Joe.
Well, you know, this kind of, in some ways, it kind of found me. I had done a lot of things. You know, I enjoyed tap class. I hated ballet class. Consequently, I ended up in tap class right. a lot more. And modern and jazz fell somewhere in between. So I had taken all those different kinds of dance. So I sort of gravitated towards the percussive dances as that world opened up and I saw how many, you know, almost every folk tradition has some sort of percussive dance. And so as I saw that, and then also with all my theater background, I really started in theater, and I just saw this idea that you could take all of that and combine it together in ways that people hadn't been doing. And so, and then I got to Minneapolis, and there was this wonderful sort of arts community that allowed, had all sorts of venues at all different levels of your career to sort of develop something. I had 2 instances in my life where I had this idea long before. One was when I was living in New York. When I didn't work as an actor, I would teach in the public schools. I was a substitute teacher, and my students loved to drum on their desks and throw things around. And I thought, boy, if you could just take all of this and put it together. This is long before Stomp or anything like that. And I said, boy, if you take all this energy and put it together into some kind of movement piece, that'd be great. Left it, didn't even think about it for years. And then I moved to Sweden, and I had a bunch of advanced tappers that were given to me in my first year there. And I had them for 2 years, and I was getting bored, and they were getting bored. And I said, let's try some different things with tap here. So this idea came to me, but I just didn't think I'd ever have time or the right kind of sort of garden to grow it in. But coming to the Twin Cities, it really, the doors opened up, but we did one piece and people started paying attention. We did another piece. And after we did our second piece, we were starting to get booked on national tours, and we were like, oh, okay, I guess this is a good idea. So it sort of fell into my lap, even though it was an idea I had that I really wanted to pursue.
For you, Charles?
Well, I also, come from a distinct theater background. I've been doing musical theater in my hometown, which had a theater in the round. So I've always been very, very inclined to have music along with theater. However, that doesn't necessarily mean I'm a musical theater junkie.
Right.
In fact, I went to school for 2 years down at Millikan University in Decatur, Illinois, and just couldn't handle being part of the musical theater world anymore. I just couldn't imagine myself doing Annie and Cats and Music Man for the...
Did you have nightmares?
No. I did.
Okay.
Daymares too. So
okay.
Many, many freak out moments. But coming up to Minneapolis, I auditioned for the dance school at the University of Minnesota. And from there, I met Carla and took a couple classes with her. And her style of jazz is incredibly rhythmic, and it uses elements of South African gumboot, which is a very distinct portion of what the Flying Fit Forum does really, really well.
Carla Grotting is artistic associate, so that's
gotcha.
Who he's talking about.
Yeah. So after having taken those classes, I was good friends with another tapper, and University of Minnesota dance program isn't well known
right.
for its tap program, even though we have some excellent rhythm companies in the city. And so I got to know this guy, and he's just a phenomenal tapper, and he's also part of the company. His name's Jeremy Bensoussan. And he asked me one day, he said, Charles, you tap, correct? And at that point in time, I hadn't put on my tap shoes in a very long time. And I said, yes, I wasn't sure. And because compared to him, I was nowhere even near the caliber. And so he said, well, you know what? I'm going to take you to this audition tonight, and I know you are just going to fall in love with this. So I threw together an audition, and it was one of the most fun, whimsical auditions. You know, the songs that they ask you to sing and the little rhythmic sections were just so... I wanted to stay. I wanted to stay and keep on learning. And so I was fortunate enough to be cast from that audition and worked on a giant... Just once again, another exciting and fun, energy-filled show called French Twist, and that was my first foray into this creative expression of using body percussion and song and dance all together.
And now you're addicted.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Can't say no.
What do you guys suggest to people that want to be in the field of dance?
Oh boy. Well, you know, it's always really good to get good training and to really work on that. And there's so many different ways to be in the field of dance that you have to kind of figure out what your passion is and then get the proper training for that. But, you know, if you're going to do anything, you sort of, you know, again, you could go in a direction, want to be a ballet dancer or a modern dancer. What we do is completely different than anything else. So you really have to kind of figure out what part of that world you want to be in. And then find the right school, a school that concentrates on that part of it. Or you can also decide to just study outside of a university setting and try to do it that way. But the training is the most important thing. And then it's just the same with any art form, that being in the right place and having the right kind of luck. And always think of how you can make a career or make a life in dance that's going to be satisfying and is also going to not make you starve.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult, and it's something to be thought of before you
dive into it.
You know, whether you want to truly try to make a career in this or whether you want to make it an avocation, it's all valid and all good, but you have to make those kinds of decisions and think about it.
I would say that in a serious career, if you're looking at it as a vocation, it's incredibly important to research training and make sure that you're not just, you know, kind of doing it because you want a hobby or
right.
because somebody, you know, was like, oh my goodness, my mom had these tap shoes. Do you want them? You know,
right.
It's like, you know, as most people like to point out, it might not be the most lucrative option for your career. You're going to have to hold 2 to 3 or whatever, how many jobs that allow you to feel comfortable working as an ongoing artist. But I would say that though, that for any interest in dance, I think nowadays, especially, there are multiple formats like swing dancing and salsa and ballroom that are still incredibly exciting and really, really fulfilling as far as health, physical health, mental health, and just feeling like something, you're doing something different. And that's where being a part of this company, I've been wanting to teach people the ham bone, like, look at what we are doing. And then I'll go through just a tiny little phrase and they'll be like, whoa, where did all those sounds come from? Like,
right.
You're just using your hand and you're just like, and that came out. So it really is, people are really excited, but stay in that excitement. Don't do anything that people think that you have to be a prima ballerina to truly understand a dancer's body, or you don't have to be a, you know, extraordinary caliber to be a dancer. It's the inner feeling, and I know I'm getting metaphysical on this, but
everybody should dance. It's just a great thing. And Charles was saying, you know, there's swing dance and tango, and there's little communities around all those kinds of dance too, if you start to get into them, that you can discover that it can open up a whole other world. Whether you do it as a career or whether you do it just for fun, it can just make your life so much better, not to mention all the good physical and sort of mental benefits of it. So everybody should dance. I should tell one little story. I gravitated towards the tap classes when I was younger. And some nights I'd go away from tap and I'd say, you know, this is great, but this is never going to get me anywhere. And then it ended up being my life. So, you know, I think that's a lesson in following what you're passionate about and not having an imposed idea of what you want should be, but kind of following your passion. But it's difficult. And I have to say that because it's difficult and people really need to consider if they want to try to make a career in it. So
there is a health aspect to this too.
Definitely.
Oh yeah.
You have to make a commitment to your body that you're going to be doing this.
Yes, you have to take care of your body. And you can also hurt yourself, you know. It's a lot of stuff, and when you're on there on the stage performing, you've got to do it. And I've got a couple little injuries right now that I'm going, "Oh, I hope I get through this," you know. But you do it, you know, and you warm up and you take care of yourself and you get rest and all that sort of thing.
So it sounds like a labor of love too, from what you're describing with your saying.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, you better love it. And we do. I mean, it's a wonderful thing, but there's a lot of work.
Now, what do you think's unique about the Minnesota arts scene?
Oh, I think it's very well supported, both financially and also obviously from the arts, the vote that we had.
The legacy fund.
The legacy funds. Mm-hmm. Minnesotans want art, and they want good nature, and they want art. I mean, I think it makes for a quality of life, and I think that that's unusual. I don't think we know how lucky we are to live in a state that believes in those sorts of things. We would not be here this weekend were it not for that. So
that's true.
I think it's an unusual place in the United States. Because it's so supportive, and people in general, I think, see it as an important part of their lives.
I think there are so many people who couldn't imagine not having a Walker Art Center. And that's just, it makes me ecstatic, because while we can have that high art and have it literally in our backyard, you know, have a sculpture garden, have a Walker Art Center or a Hennepin Art Center. That there's what I love, and I think that is the best about Minneapolis, is it's a cultural hub. It's not just, you know, you're not just going to see touring companies coming in of Wicked. You're going to get as many crazy bands. Like the other night, we both went to see Balkan Beatbox the Cedar Cultural Center. And that is a venue that continually reaches far outside of what any Midwestern venue really, really thinks about. And though they have to pay a little bit more to support those giant, larger bands, because Balkan Beatbox is playing Chicago this weekend. And so the funding is probably the best part. I would have to say the best part. We have just amazing venues that can support themselves through. Like, there's a local theater called Mixed Blood Theater Company.
Know it well, yes.
And their next season is completely free. Every show is a free show, no matter whether it's a big production like they had Avenue Q this past year, which also kind of helped, you know, pave the way for having. But they can now have more shows in this new season and have it completely funded by outside benefactors and by government funding.
I think what's important is people need to realize that, hey, there is stuff being done with this money, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that you should come and participate in these events.
Yes.
Especially if you've never gotten out and really experienced
exactly
any of the art that's available in your communities. It is ever so important that you witness that and see how your tax dollars are actually being used, and they're being used for good and the benefit of the community.
Right.
To create more sustainability. Mm-hmm. Now, it's going to be tomorrow night at the Valencia Art Center at 8 o'clock. It's an intimate space. It's kind of like being in the round or a black box. Mm-hmm. So make sure you get your tickets ahead of time, because there's no guarantee there's going to be availability at the door. This is a fantastic event. We don't get percussive dance here all the time. And please attend. Thank you so much for coming in, Joe and Charles.
Thank you.
Thanks. Another big thank you to Joe Koala and Charles Robinson for taking the time out for our special edition of Art Beat on Friday. Remember to see Joe Koala in the Flying Foot Forum this Saturday night at 8 o'clock at the Valencia Arts Center. More information on the upcoming performance can be found at pagetheater.org.
Art Beat is written and produced by KQAL-FM on the campus of Winona State University. Visit us on the web at kqal.org.